The question was asked for a couple that's Chozer B'Tshuva or Giyur, and they're getting married, and they foresee that there's a high likelihood that they would want to use birth control in the beginning of marriage, and how do we view that halachically? So I'm telling you at the onset that I will not give you a concrete answer, because this is something that is really case-specific. When I was a starting rabbi here at Mahon, so a student with a similar scenario to the one you gave, only with a few more complexities, came and asked that he was getting married, may he use birth control? And I said, I'll get back to you. And it seemed very clear to me, according to one of Rabbi Feinstein's responses, that in their scenario, using certain types of birth control would be permitted. But I didn't want to give my own ruling on it. I called my Rebbe, Rav David Feinstein, and I asked him, what do I tell this guy? Now, this was an alumni of ours. He wasn't in the neighborhood anymore. He was living in a town far away where he didn't feel like he had a rabbi who he can ask. So he called in the question. So Rabbi Feinstein said, don't answer. So I said, but wait a second. According to the responsa, isn't this permissible? So he said, not for you to say. I said, but am I wrong? He said, the answer is you don't answer that question. So I said, he has no one else to ask. He said, so let him find another rabbi. You're a young rabbi, you shouldn't be answering those questions. So I'm just explaining to you that these are questions of great weight. Even though I had gotten smicha from him a number of years earlier, he wasn't willing to answer me whether I was right in my analysis of the responsa. Years later, I discussed it with him again, And then he was willing. And then a few years later, he told me I should start answering in this realm. But you're talking about a long time, over a decade, almost 2 decades after I got smicha. I'm saying, so this is the approach that our tradition has, that this is a question about bringing a life to the world. Meaning, that's a good question. I was waiting for you guys to do the math. One day we'll talk about
it. I was 12.
I was hoping none of you would figure it out. The issue of birth control is often taken lightly by the younger generation. From a halachic perspective, the question has severity. And also from a philosophical perspective. We don't look at it and just say, I'm postponing the baby by 2 or 3 years. We're saying, you could have had a baby this year, could have had a baby next year, and you're opting not to have those. Now you pray that you'll have an opportunity in 3 years to have one. But it's not that you're postponing this one by 3 years. It's that you're forgoing this one, you're forgoing the next one, and you're hoping that when you choose to have one, God will bless you and you'll merit to have one then. Okay, that's, you know, you're also dealing with an issue where you have a biblical prohibition to have children. You get married, you have a biblical biblical commandment, I'm sorry, to have... what did I drink tonight? You have a biblical commandment to have children, pruvu, right? So when we approach the question, firstly, we have to understand we're approaching a severe question. We're not approaching a simple question. Even if a rabbi would find room to say that one would be permitted to use birth control, there are different types of birth control. That's number one. Some are easier halachically, some are more stringent halachically, but that's after you crossed hurdle number one. Now, hurdle number one is a big challenge because a couple has a mitzvah to have children. So you're telling a person, yeah, postpone the mitzvah. You won't do the mitzvah this year. That's a big deal. We don't do that so easily. So there can be instances where it would be permitted. There's another issue with regards to which birth control one might be able to use, because you're not allowed to spill your seed unnecessarily, so which birth control could you use? So that's another halachic discussion. But assuming we're going to leave those two, because those two are very person-specific, depending on many aspects of each person's individual situation. Rabbi Feinstein writes in his responsa that when couples would come to him, if it was dire circumstances where it was really necessary, so then we're not even discussing which type of birth control, but then he would say, okay, in your case, well you're permitted for 3 months or 4 months to use this form of contraception, and we'll meet again in 3-4 months to reanalyze. Very often people say, I'm getting married, I want a 2-year break, a 2-year hiatus, and then we'll see how it works. I have to tell you that I've seen quite a few couples getting divorced within the first 2 years of marriage. And I often wonder if part of the reason is that they never really consummated their marriage. People think that once they get married and they become intimate, they're married. It's not exactly that way. There's a marked difference between two people being intimate and all that there is about it is something physical, or two people being intimate with the drive to bring another soul to the world, with the drive of being partners and bringing a child to the world. And there's nothing quite like it. Meaning there's... What you have to realize that for most people, their greatest accomplishment in life is the kids they bring to the world. It's not so common that people can look back at age 80 or 90 and say, I accomplished so much. What do people do? You know, I was a dentist. Very nice. I fixed people's teeth. It's a nice thing. It's a good thing. I'm happy I did it. And now I fixed 40,000 people's teeth. Okay, good for you. Very nice. But the kids you bring to the world, hopefully you do a good job. There, you really made a mark on the world. It's a blessing you've brought to the world. It's something meaningful you've done in the world. Meaningful to them, meaningful to the world. So it's one of the major accomplishments for most people. Yeah, for most people, it's among the top 3 accomplishments of their life, of their whole life. So it's not a small thing that we say, you could do it, you cannot do it. It's like, don't worry about it, in 2 years it'll work. Who told you? You know. So first of all, I'm saying as far as attitude, we look at it with severity. We also look at it as something which is problematic very often for people's relationships. When they use birth control, there are multiple issues. The connection never evolves to its great stage of being parents together. And then there's also other aspects where the connection remains focused on other things, and people never mature. To a certain degree, the connection can never mature. There's another hindrance if one is using a hormonal form of contraception, so then that also affects one's moods and one's mood swings. That's another major thing. I'm not even talking about the medical risks involved in using those things. So there are many angles of how we look at it. In a nutshell, what's really pertinent is you have to have a Rav who understands you and your wife and understands what's really necessary and what's only perceived as necessary. Sometimes couples err in both directions. You can have a couple where she's had 5 nervous breakdowns, he's running away from home, the house is a total wreck, and he says, God forbid, birth control, blah, 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 what are you talking about? I'm an Orthodox Jew, we don't do those types of things. Well, and you let your wife go into a nervous breakdown 5 times. You know, that is normal. You know, so then you have people who err in that direction. And then you have people who err in the opposite direction, where they say, I can't, what are you talking about? If me and my wife handling a kid, you know, that's responsibility. Wait a second, I have 3 kids, how are you going to do that? They only got 2 hands. Okay, so sometimes it involves parenting classes, sometimes it involves seeing other families and how they do it. Sometimes it involves being less of a perfectionist. So yeah, the kids will sometimes walk around and their nose won't be 100% clean 100% of the time. It's not the end of the world. I'm saying it's worth having another child if that's the cost, you know. So it's not... I'm saying there are different things that a person has to learn. But I'm saying people err in both directions. Just a second, Benny, I'll get to you. People err in both directions, and that's why I think it's important to have a Rav who understands you and understands your wife and will think with you. And sometimes we'll tell you guys, you gotta mature and you should do it and figure out a way of making it work. Meaning sometimes it's a question of attitude. I know many couples that said, I have to finish my degree, she has to finish her degree, and then a child just doesn't fit into this plan. And then you see other couples who say, of course we need to have children. Now let's see how it fits into the plan. Sometimes it's a question of perspective, and sometimes you can't change your spouse's perspective. as much as it's a question of perspective, sometimes people look at it and they're not going to look at it any other way. Sometimes a girl will have a friend who tells her, the worst thing that happened to us was I got pregnant the first month and we didn't have any time together. I was vomiting my guts out the first 3 months after marriage, and then we couldn't have it affected the rest of our lives. If our marriage stinks, it's because of that. Okay, so she's heard that. And she's bought it, hook, line, and sinker, and she's had 5 years to think about it, because this wonderful, brilliant friend told her this when she was long before she was dating. And by the time she's dating you, it's like, no way, hey, buddy, I know what's bad in life. No way, we're doing that one. Okay, so I'm not saying it's right, but I've seen very often that people have decided on a certain path, and there's no changing their minds. Okay, you got to deal with that too. But all in all, it's worthwhile to have someone who you both feel comfortable talking to. It's a very personal question in both directions. And at the end of the day, you're the one who lives with the repercussions. Meaning, I always tell people this. When the baby cries at night, don't call me, right? I'm dealing with my baby crying at night. So there's real responsibility. You're dealing with the baby. You have a new boss in your life, and that's good. It's healthy. It's beautiful. It's the nicest thing in the world. I haven't seen anything nicer. Even when a baby is yelling at you and crying and pulling at your beard, you'll still have a beard, Marcel. That's a blessing. It's beautiful, and it's something which you learn to appreciate over time. In the beginning, it's very hard. And then the second child is harder. And the third child is even harder. And after that, it gets easier. I was also the third child, okay? No, not because they help, because you get the hang of it. Because you start learning how to function on less sleep. You start learning how to sleep with the kid. You start learning what to fight over and what not to fight over with the child. And experience teaches you. So
does that screw up the first three kids? The
first one gets a double portion because of that. He's practicing.
Okay. So in summation, is there room to permit it? There are instances where halacha permits it, but it requires someone with understanding and someone who has life experience and hopefully someone who understands you and your wife. Is it something that we take lightly? No. It's something we take with great severity. And it's something which we invest a lot of thought in. Is it recommended? Usually not. Usually it is of detriment to the couple. Does that mean it's an absolute no-no? No. There are instances where it's the right thing to do. The right thing, to my mind, is to consult with the Rav, who has an understanding of the halacha on one side, and will also understand the hardships you and your wife will encounter. It's very important, if you're going to do that, to choose a Rav or a Rebbetzin or a pair that your wife is willing to talk to and feels comfortable talking to, because sometimes it involves, a paradigm shift. Because sometimes people grow up with a certain concept. Like, there are many women who say, I can't have a kid before I'm 30. I can't have a kid before my doctorate. And it's a huge paradigm shift, because in their mind, they are number one a career woman, or number one, they have to have a certain number of degrees. And it's not so simple to take someone who's developed a certain attitude to life and suddenly tell them, actually, it's more important to have a kid than to have another doctorate under your belt. And that's why it's important that whoever you're going to have the conversation with will also have a rapport with her, can think with her, discuss with her, and develop with her. It's not as simple as do or don't. The halacha might be that simple, but reality is more complex. Meaning, at the end of the day, the wife is really bearing the brunt of the load. If she's nursing, so then she has the hardships of nursing and expressing. If she's not nursing, it's still a lot of hardships. A mother will intrinsically feel a tremendous connection to the baby. I want to end with a story. There was a woman who was a super feminist. She was what was that thing Clinton was? What was that called? What type of scholarships?
Democrat?
Road scholar.
Road.
There's Road and there's another one with an F.
Fulbright.
Okay. So she was a Fulbright scholar from Israel. She worked with the chief justices here. And then she became a Fulbright scholar in Yale, I think. They actually funded her coming from Israel to Yale. So she was this top-notch, like, everyone thought she might actually end up being a Supreme Court justice. Really a top law student. And she always spoke about women's rights. And we'd meet at different events, and she'd always try to spar with me in Talmud. She'd say, you know, and what do you do? How is this ethical that the Talmud says this about women or that about women? And it was interesting because she then started dating. And then she actually got married. And she, until the baby came to the world, she was still that feminist. She's going to have her job and she's going to be a Supreme Court justice. And she had a lot of theory. And then she had her first baby. And suddenly, she wasn't going to work for a year. So I didn't want to say anything. But I was very impressed. Because she let her natural emotions and connection to the baby, she let that override all the theory that she had espoused all those years. Some people would be diehards. They'd say, I don't care that my heart is crying and I feel so guilty and it doesn't feel right. I'm going to go and show the world. She didn't. She said, wait a second, what's going on here? I feel connected to the baby. I can't go out to law. What difference does it make if I sue another person or not? This is my baby. Okay. Year one, year two. By now her kids are about 10 or 12. And now she's going back to law. Now that the kids are already grown up. But I remember her from when she started dating through the kids, etc. I'm just saying, sometimes we have a theory. And when you finally get that baby into your hands, all that theory melts away. Suddenly there's something very real. There's a real connection that's a part of you that's there. And a person has to realize that there's what to talk in that direction as well. Sometimes the wise person doesn't win the argument, he wins the next step. Sometimes all you got to do is get to the next step, and then it's like a domino effect, you've won. So that's also something to think about. I'll tell you a funny story just to end that. Someone once asked me to do a bris for their son, and he called me up with the details from the hospital, and I said to him, I'm not comfortable with the baby's health. We're postponing the bris indefinitely. Day before the eighth day, I get a phone call. Person tells me on the phone, hi, I'm so-and-so's relative, and I'd like to understand why you ruled that you should postpone the bris. So I said, who are you? What are you talking about? So he said, I'm his relative, and he asked me, and I took the documents from the hospital to the top child pediatrician in the top hospital here in Jerusalem, and he said, there's absolutely no reason to postpone the circumcision, so I'd like to understand why you ruled differently. So I said, that's a great question. Call me in a week, and we'll talk about it. So he said, no. I said, yeah. He said, but who said you're right? I said, that's a good point. We'll talk about it in a week if you'd like. So he said, no. He sent me to research this. And after the doctor said this way, well, the rabbis sided with the doctors and no one agrees with you. So now it's the doctors and the rabbis against me. So I said to him, look, I respect everything you've said, except for one thing. I have no idea who you are before this phone conversation. So if you want someone's personal medical information, you better have the father of the child call me and tell me to talk to you. Because if not, there's nothing to talk about. So have a good day. He said, wait a second, I just told you I have all the papers and the doctor's name. I said, that's very nice. So then call the father of the baby and he's free to take another mohel because I will not circumcise his baby tomorrow. And you can have a nice day because you won't get any information out of me. But my point was the beginning of the conversation, where what I said to him was, no problem, we'll talk in a week. Which was very obvious, like, if I won that step, so I won. End of the story was that the guy was stam a nosy body who wanted to do the bris. He was a mohel. And he was trying to trip me up so he could call the father and say, I spoke to the mohel, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. He admitted that he was wrong. I didn't know that at the time. I was just trying to be ethical. So I just said, I can't talk to you without the father's permission. You can talk to the father, whatever you want to. And when I called the father, I hung up with him, I called the father, and the father said, what a nosy body. No one gave him any papers. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's stam lying to you. It's like a nasty story, right? What?
Wonder why Mashiach hasn't come yet.
On the contrary, you learn from this. Not to be naive, right? Okay.